listening to Sex and Politics at savage.love.
Sex and Politics.
Tim Miller really needs no introduction around here at this point, but I am the host of this here bonus podcast for Savage Lovecast Magnum subscribers, so I'm going to do my host job and introduce Tim Miller anyway. Miller is a writer at large for The Bulwark, host of The Bulwark's flagship daily podcast, The Bulwark Podcast, author of the New York Times bestseller, Why We Did It, a travelogue from the Republican Road to Hell. He was previously political director for Republican Voters Against Trump. Before that, he was communications director for Jeb Bush. Before that, Miller was involved for a very long time in Republican politics at the highest levels as a GOP operative. When the Republican Party lost its way and lost its mind, Tim did not pull a Nancy Mace or an Elise Stefanik. He did not shove his tongue and then the rest of his head up Donald Trump's ass. He quit his job. He left GOP politics, walked away. Now, Miller is one of the smartest, most incisive, and hilariously mordant voices commenting on politics. Maybe you've seen him on MSNBC. And you know what? Miller, after two outings on the Savage Lovecast and two outings on Sex and Politics, Miller is getting pretty good at giving sex advice too. This, of course, is Sex and Politics, a special bonus podcast we do for Savage Lovecast Magnum subscribers. We're making a big chunk of this interview with Tim Miller available for all of our subscribers, Micro and Magnum. We hope you enjoy it. We hope it also tempts you into becoming a Magnum sub yourself and enjoying all the perks of being one of my subs. You get the Magnum Savage Lovecast, more calls, more guests, no ads. You get all of Savage Love. You get all of the archives. You get invites to Savage Love Live. You get Struggle Session, and you get Sex and Politics podcasts in their entirety. The last time Tim Miller came on the show in February, he asked to come back specifically on 420. The deal was we'd both get high and check in about the presidential election after the GOP and Dem primaries were over and the general election was underway and Donald Trump was on trial. As you will hear, Tim, who may be one of the busiest people in the podcasting racket, and we really appreciate it when he makes time for us, but Tim didn't quite hold up his end of the bargain. Only one of us was stoned. See if you can tell who it was. Hope you enjoy my conversation with Tim Miller from The Bulwark. Welcome back to Sex and Politics, Tim Miller.
Ugh, I'm honored. People have been begging for this return.
You actually volunteered to come back so we could do a show that would come out on 420 and we would both be stoned. Honoring our gentleman's agreement to be stoned, I got stoned, so I am stoned and you are...
not stoned. I wanted to be, and but I was a stoner in college big time, and I was a stoner in my early 20s. I met my husband. He was not a stoner, and I turned him into a stoner, and now we flipped because, you know, I have a daily podcast and shit and like life and content, and I get anxiety, you know, so for various early middle-aged reasons. And so anyway, he's on a work trip. And I texted him and I was like, where's the weed? And I told Dan Savage I get stoned with him and I don't know where it is. I was a Republican stoner and now I'm a straight-laced non-Republican. You know, I'm just like doing exactly what you're not supposed to do.
And you're in New Orleans, and if you can't find the weed your husband hid, there's no weed to be found in New Orleans.
I probably could have found some had I, you know, spent more than 5 minutes, unfortunately. But such is life. So I apologize. Thank you for honoring it, and I'll try to carry us since I'm a little more clear of mind.
And I know you can carry us because I'm listening to The Bulwark, the flagship podcast of Bulwark Industries Incorporated, and you're doing a great job. Thank you. And that comes out every day. How do you do it? You do The Bulwark, you do The Next Level, you're always on everybody else's podcast on The Bulwark. You do more podcasts than a human being can possibly be expected writing to do in a single week.
Yeah, I know. It is an interesting question. I also like to party. So I have a lot. And I'm a parent. And so I'm going to just be gray at the end of 2024 is the answer. I'm burning on both ends of the wick, but it's fun. It's fun. I mean, it's like, oh, poor me. I've got to talk for an hour every morning. And then some mornings I got to talk for 2 hours. It's not that bad. I got it.
All right, let's get to it. Usually when we do Sex and Politics, we talk about politics forever and ever and ever, and then we take a sex question at the end.
Great.
But for this one, I want to open with a question that one of my listeners sent to me, and I just want to punt to you. So here we go.
Hi, Dan. I'm 39 years old. Consider myself super progressive on everything. And I have voted Democrat in every election since I was 18, both local and national, even though I find many Democrats to be far too close to center for me, but I do it anyway. I have hit my limit. I do not want to vote for Joe Biden this year. And in fact, I don't think I can. I am Palestinian American, and right now there are an estimated 25,000 people, half of whom are children, dead in Gaza in a war that we are funding and complicit in. And he has shown incredibly little concern or empathy for those people to the point where I just can no longer support this administration. It would be impossible for me to do so on a personal level, a moral level. But okay, say that that's not important to you for some reason, but you have other issues that you're not thrilled with Biden. For example, assault rifles are still legal, or your student loan debt hasn't changed, or he's just too old and you're sick of the DNC supporting establishment candidates who don't align with your values in a real meaningful way and don't understand that intersectionality is key to ending oppression. What do you do? To me, it feels like it's time for us to stop living in fear and to let it be known that true progressives in this country won't be bullied into choosing people they don't really want election after election. Like, what sort of democracy are we in if that's the best we can do? You know, hasn't fascism already won? Shouldn't we be putting our energy into finding candidates that really align with our values and letting it be known that we won't be subjected to this anymore? I am genuinely curious for your thoughts because, as you said, the next 11 months are going to be consumed with this. Obviously, I'm not interested in another Donald Trump presidency, but I really feel stuck between being true to what I know is right and this system that we've set up.
So, Tim, if progressives have to vote for Biden or feel like they have to vote for Biden in November to prevent Trump from returning to the White House, hasn't fascism already won, and shouldn't we just grease the skids then for the fascist?
No, we shouldn't. Actual fascism would be much worse than our current state. I just want to start by saying to this listener that I maybe am projecting some anger onto other people, that this is not necessarily all about her. I totally sympathize with the perspective of somebody that's a Palestinian American and looking at what's happening over there and being very frustrated and kind of wondering what options are. It's a horrific situation. So I totally sympathize with that. And I guess I'll also say, I don't think she said where she lived. Did she say where she lived?
She did not.
She did not. So a lot of what I'm about to say next is totally moot if you live in Seattle. Okay, if you want to just send a message to Joe Biden as a Seattle voter, that's fine. But when it comes to the people that actually have agency over stopping Donald Trump in the states that are going to matter in this election, I'm going to name them right now: Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina, and Georgia, those seven. But also probably if you're in Texas or Florida or like Minnesota or New Mexico, just to be safe, a couple of the borderline ones, maybe you should also listen to this advice. If you're in a deep blue state, just, you know, you can do whatever makes you feel happy. But besides, if you are in one of these other states, my message is that voting is not actually about self-actualization and making your heart sing. Like, voting is about picking between the better choice of the options on the table. And this happens a lot in life. And for some reason, voting has gotten wrapped up into this kind of like, it's part of my identity. And I should do what feels right and all of this. And I see this from conservatives all the time, by the way. My never Trump conservatives are like, I'm going to write in Ronald Reagan because Joe Biden doesn't make my heart sing. And I said the same message to them, which is like, no, voting is like any other decision in life where you have two choices, or some maybe three sometimes, and you're trying to decide. And maybe for certain people, they're bad choices. Like, for me, it's not that bad of a choice. I think Joe Biden's clearly better than Donald Trump. But if for you, it's two bad choices, it's like, what if you have a kid and you live in a district that has terrible public schools, but you also don't really have enough money to pay for private schools, right? Like, you have two bad options and you have to pick. Like, this happens every day. Like, what if you're driving down the highway and all they have is an Arby's or a Subway? Like, you got to pick between Arby's or Subway, or you can starve, right? Like you have to pick. And in this situation, the choice is so clear. And because of the nature of the coalition that we have to put together, with people that go from Bernie Sanders to Liz Cheney, like, a lot of people are not going to be happy with their choice and are going to have to buck up and make the right choice in this case, because the threat of Donald Trump is so, so, so great. And that's in a country of 330 something million people, when you only have two parties, it's going to actually be pretty rare that you have a candidate that makes your heart sing. I think we were kind of lucky a lot. Like in 2008, I think we all forget how lucky we are. Like a lot of liberals and a lot of me moderates had a candidate that made our hearts sing. And that's not always going to be the case, right?
But what do you say to people though who I have always consistently forever said, pick the lesser of two evils. Sometimes the lesser of two evils makes your heart sing. Sometimes it's Obama in 2008.
Yeah.
Sometimes the lesser of two evils is just less fucking evil.
Yeah.
And my heart aches for this caller. To be a Palestinian American at this moment, to see people in this country who don't give a shit about the suffering of the Palestinians because of what Hamas did and Israel's response must just be heart-rending.
Yeah.
It's not going to get better for Palestinians if Donald Trump is president. Donald
right.
Trump has said he thinks Israel should, quote unquote, finish the job. Jared Kushner, who will probably return to the White House, has said that everybody in Gaza should be removed from Gaza to someplace else to be identified later, and all of that waterfront property should be developed.
Condos, so, baby. Mar-a-Lago, Gaza. Mar-a-Gaza. That's what they have in mind. He had a Muslim ban.
Such a greater, it's such an obviously, to me, not as a Palestinian American who is not aching the way you, caller, are aching at this moment, it seems to me the obvious choice is Biden. And as for a couple of the other things the caller raised, assault rifles are still legal because Biden is not a dictator and you've got to get Congress to act on that. But Biden has forgiven the student loan debt of 40 million Americans with an average of 20K forgiven. That has happened. How do I hear this all the time? Like, Biden promised to forgive student loan debt that went all the way up to the Supreme Court the way they wanted to do it originally. They said they weren't allowed to do it. It was unconstitutional. Biden found a workaround and has forgiven billions and billions and billions of dollars in student loan debt.
And by the way,
debt.
Dan, I hate that kind of. It's still my former Republicanism in there. I'm kind of like, was that really the right call? I don't really think so, but I'm going to vote for Joe Biden. I disagreed with that. You're never going to agree with everybody 100%. Biden did do that. That was not true. He did. I have friends whose student debt has been relieved, and I've told them I hope that they're donating some of that to Joe Biden's reelection campaign and going to go out there and knock on doors. The gun thing you went on through. Yeah, assault rifles are still legal, and this is an issue where I've gone pretty left, frankly. I would be for banning assault rifles. Joe Biden did do something. He passed the first bipartisan gun bill in a quarter century. And let me tell you, I know it might feel like small ball to people given the nature of the threat of gun violence out here. I get that. But I grew up a mile from Columbine. And after the Columbine shooting, those two boys got their guns from a gun show. And there was this whole debate about the gun show loophole. It feels kind of 90s to even mention the gun show loophole, right? That's how long this debate has been. This bill closed the gun show loophole 25 years later. Like, democracy takes time. Like, progress takes time. And Joe Biden has been, a pretty accomplished president in the grand scheme of things. And I think he's tried to move the ball as much as he could on a lot of progressive initiatives, given the fact that Republicans have the House right now. And even when he had a full control of Congress, he had a Senate that had zero vote majority. And one of the senators was Joe Manchin, who's practically a Republican, right? So he did the best that he could in all this. He's gotten a lot of stuff done on student loans, on environment. I feel like libs don't talk about this enough. They passed the biggest investment in clean energy in the nation's history. In the Inflation Reduction Act, in addition to the CHIPS. The difference between that and Donald Trump, the danger of Donald Trump, I get that you can be like, well, there's already some fascists. Like, we don't know if Donald Trump would leave if he gets in there again, okay? We really don't know. We don't know. January 6th might look like small ball compared to what happens in January of 2029 if Donald Trump gets in there and if we survive that wrong. Donald Trump doesn't believe that climate change is a problem and is going to roll back as much of that as possible. Donald Trump has plans the biggest deportation effort in history where that he's modeling off Operation Wetback. A racist name, like of the term, where he said that he only wants immigrants from the good countries, like Denmark recently. Okay, Donald Trump is an avowed
Switzerland.
Racist.
In fairness, the multicultural paradise that is Switzerland he would allow
many languages
from
there.
Switzerland,
and he said that there are going to be deportation camps. So again, is that going to alleviate the suffering of the Palestinians now? But like, it is going to create additional suffering here in America for real for marginalized people, people that are in real threat, immigrants, trans folks. And he's also not going to do anything to help alleviate the suffering of the Palestinians. And he might make the world more dangerous because he plans to take us out of all of our alliances and side with Putin and Ukraine. And we can all get into all that. So, like, he's objectively worse.
Not only will he alleviate the suffering of the Palestinians, he will accelerate.
He'll accelerate. Thank you.
Of the Palestinians. It is terrible now. It will get worse if Donald Trump is in the White House. There was a brief ceasefire in Gaza that Biden got everyone to agree to. It was too brief. We need a ceasefire. We need to use more of the leverage we have over Israel. It does seem like the Biden administration is coming around to using more of that leverage as it gets more and more outrageous and more pressure on Netanyahu to get the fuck out. But the idea, and caller, again, some of the tenseness in the tone of my voice and Tim's voice is not directed at you.
No.
Recognize the pain that you're in, but like I get this all the time from my progressive friends. That I can't be bullied anymore with the lesser of two evils. It's like, okay, so the greater evil then?
Right.
And no recognition of progress, progressives. Progress is always incremental because there's no leap forward to utopia. And so many progressives don't understand that progress is, by definition, an incremental process. And there's this frustration expressed by so many progressives that there isn't a switch that the Democratic president can flip that gives us everything we want all at once. And if we don't get everything we want all at once, we were cheated.
Can I also just say, also, if it makes it feel like we're dumping on progressives, I'm just as mad as at the right wingers who make the same argument to me. I'm not trying to create any equivalencies, but I've had a conversation that sounded exactly like that caller, but from a right wing perspective, from a Jewish person who's like, Joe Biden hasn't been supportive enough of Bibi. I know some progressive people listen to that and be like, come on, are you kidding me? But Joe Biden has been nudging Bibi to show restraint, and Joe Biden has been trying to whatever appeal to the Dearborn protesters, Muslim protesters, right? These Jewish folks will say, well, I hate Trump. I don't like Trump, but like I have to go with him because of that. And I don't like what Biden did on student loans. I don't like what he did on Afghanistan. And my message to them is exactly the same, which is like, this is crazy. You can't trust Donald Trump to be any better for you. Donald Trump is a walking disaster. He had lunch with anti-Semites. All right. Nick Fuentes, like Donald Trump.
Nick Fuentes, who has called for the execution of all American Jews.
Yes. Donald Trump had lunch with that dude.
All Americans who are not Christian, so Muslim Americans, Palestinian Americans, too. The people that Donald Trump is having lunch with, calling for your execution, and you are thinking about voting for Donald Trump because assault rifles, and you haven't read anything about what's actually happened with student loans.
So not, it's just
again,
across
again
the board.
Caller, I'm not dogging you with that. I've heard that from a million of my friends who are like, they didn't do anything on student loans. And I'm like, can you Google that right now in front of me on your phone? And Tim, I got to push back. The workaround he found was forgiving the interest. People have paid back the loan that they got,
I know.
But they've turned them into 0% loans, which to me—
Well, should we be relieving any doctor's loans? Should we be leaving any doctor's loans? Probably
yes,
not.
Yes, yes, we should. Yes, we should, because an educated populace benefits everyone in that population. Okay. It is why people in Europe, why European governments understand that you shouldn't crush people who are going to college with debt. You
well, I agree with that.
To be able
we
to
can
get
fight about this. This is the point. This is the point. We're going to need 70 million people to vote for Joe Biden to stop actual fascism from happening. And some of us are going to disagree on stuff. And I just want to circle back to the top point about there's Liz Cheney and there's Bernie Sanders. Like these two people agree on basically nothing. I'm sure they could find an issue. If you're like going through issue by issue, I'm sure they could find one thing they agree on, but they agree on basically nothing. And they're both going to be, I expect, speaking at the Democratic National Convention for Joe Biden. And they're going to be doing so because he is so much better than the alternative. And both of them have spoken clearly about this. And both of them have said that they have policy disagreements with Joe Biden on a range of issues. Opposite sometimes. I bet Liz Cheney's mad at Joe Biden for not being stronger with Israel. And Bernie has said that he's been mad at him for not doing more for Gaza. It's just like, that's just the nature of this. We have to make a choice based on the choice in front of us. And you know, and it's so clear, and the risk is so great. And so I would point you to that, like to those examples, and just understand that you're in a, no matter whether you're on the Liz Cheney or the Bernie side of this, you're in this coalition with people that you guys are going to have to make some everybody's going to have to make compromises to try to make this work, or else you're going to give the real fascists the power. And they're not fully unified, as we see in Congress. The Republicans have a lot of disagreements on a lot of things, but they're pretty much unified on a few things, like deportation and giving Donald Trump all the power possible, and trying to put limits on democracy and access to voting, and screwing over trans people. Like, there's a handful of really bad things that the Republicans are totally united on that they'll be happy to inflict on the country with Donald Trump in power, despite the fact that he has been indicted 4 times and tried a coup. Like, it's crazy. So we got to all be grownups. We got to all make sacrifices. Joe Biden wants to give my tax money to somebody that ran up $160,000 in debt, be doing sociology, and then decided that they wanted to sell their penis art on Instagram, and that doesn't make $160,000 back. If Joe Biden wants to do that, I don't think that's great public policy, but that's fine with me because it's better than fucking Donald Trump.
You know, I got into an argument with a friend about this very topic who said to me, you would never compromise on gay marriage. You would never support a candidate who opposed marriage equality. And I looked at him and I was like,
do you know how
in
old
2008, Joe, 2008, Barack Obama was running for fucking president, and 96. He said he opposed marriage equality because when a man married a woman, God was present, .. Begging the question, who's fucking there when a man marries a man? Beelzebub?
Maybe Bernie nobody. Sanders?
Maybe nobody. It was the most insulting framing and the most buying into religious right conservative arguments about marriage equality. I wrote that man a $5,000 check in 2008 and voted for him.
Didn't you all? Were you? I don't know. I want to age you. You were voting in 96, right? 92?
I voted for Walter Mondale.
Yeah, Clinton passed. Whoa, you're looking great, Dan. For a Walter Mondale voter, you look amazing. 1990s. And Clinton passed fucking DOMA.
Yeah.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Don't, what are you guys after talking he, about? After he came, and the Defense of Marriage Act.
Yeah.
And I would have voted for him again because the alternative was far, far worse for queer people. So to anybody out there who's thinking, you know, I am talking to a caller who's obviously in a lot of pain and distress about what's going on in Gaza, and I ache. I also ache for the families of the hostages that are still somewhere being held captive and tortured in Gaza who need to be released as a condition of the ceasefire that I would like to see happen. But I've had people say to me, like, you would never compromise. You would never, on this issue, on your issue, vote for the lesser of two evils. And like, no, I did, over and over and over again. And that's how you move the ball. That's how you make incremental progress around, you know, we supported the candidates for president, for national office, who were better on gay stuff and eventually got to a place where we were able to support candidates who were everything good we wanted on gay stuff, who were great on gay stuff. That's how you make that kind of incremental progress where then you fucking win. All right. I hope you enjoyed that part of my conversation with Tim Miller. If you'd like to hear the rest of my conversation with Tim Miller, go to savage.love and become a Magnum Savage Lovecast subscriber now. Think of the bragging rights. You can tell your friends you're one of Dan Savage's subs. Another perk, you'll get to hear me and Tim Miller talk about Christine Dick when we get around to giving some sex advice, which, you know, after 4 appearances on the Savage Lovecast and Sex and Politics, Tim Miller is getting really, really good at. Hope you enjoyed that taste. Hope you're tempted to become a sub right now at savage.love.